The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 19th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. Much of today's show is about water. Last week, in front of an audience, we recorded a show about water as part of the 2018 Artisphere Festival presented by the Walton Arts Center. Still on the Hill explained how water has inspired their last two albums, and they played music for us. Plus, Terry Lane, the executive director of Northwest Arkansas Land Trust, talked to us about that group's work, and we considered water in the global perspective with Carl Safina from the Safina Center and P.J. Marshall, co-founder of Restore the Earth Foundation. That's ahead. First, this Tuesday, the Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks and Fayetteville revealed yesterday that the pathology reports of more than 19,000 veteran patients from across the country will have to be externally reviewed after it was discovered a staff pathologist was, as VA officials termed it, impaired.
All but Senator Tom Cotton were on hand. Representative Bruce Westerman called the situation a colossal system failure.
Unfortunately, according to our briefing, we already know a family in my district lost a loved one because of an improper diagnosis, and there are many more cases yet to be evaluated.
Representative Steve Womack acknowledged the many veterans across the country who seek treatment at this VA facility.
Today's disclosure will be chilling news to the thousands who use the facility. And while we are here to explain what has happened, it's vitally important for those veterans affected to understand what is being done to notify, counsel, and treat those who may have been affected.
Womack says the delegation was briefed last Thursday by the Department of Veterans Affairs Office of Inspector General, which is investigating the situation. Fayetteville VA Interim Medical Director Kelvin Parks says the pathologist who he declined identifying was hired back in 2005.
A veteran Healthcare Systems of the Ozark pathologist was found to be impaired on March 22, 2016. The pathologist was immediately removed from clinical care. Prior to the incident, this veteran employee had no previous disciplinary actions and was deemed an excellent candidate for the impaired physician program.
Park says the physician completed treatment and was placed back into clinical care on October 12, 2016.
On October 13, 2017, 1 year later, this same VHSO employee was reported to leadership regarding reports of possible impairment.
That's when the physician was fired, Park says. An internal review of over 900 patients revealed 7 misdiagnosed cases. One death possibly linked to the pathologist is under investigation. Those findings have triggered a larger investigation, Park says, requiring a team of 30 independent pathologists to review all tissue biopsies interpreted and diagnosed by the impaired pathologist. From October of 2005 to October of 2017, a total of 19,794 cases. Of those patients, 5,250 are now deceased. Official letters are being issued today to all affected patients and their families, Park says. Once the independent review is complete, flagged cases will be followed up immediately.
We're treating this like a national disaster.
The process will take several months, he said. In the interim, the Fayetteville VA has set up a call center for concerned veterans at 1-866-388-5428. Senator John Bozeman, speaking softly, lauded this VA as top-ranked, citing dedicated staff.
Sadly, today we have a tragic situation, and it truly is a tragedy, in the sense that we have failed. And so I think it's important that you realize that the congressional delegation is united in this. We're going to do all that we can, certainly any service that we can provide to take care of the veterans that potentially have been impaired.
The Fayetteville VA will hold a town hall meeting in 2 weeks to address the situation. The Veterans Healthcare System of the Ozarks provides care to more than 53,000 veterans in the tri-state area. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, June 19th, 2018. Ahead, portions of a live event recorded at the Walton Arts Center last week. This year's Artisphere Festival, presented by the Walton Arts Center, is another combination of music, visual arts, and film screenings. The theme flowing through all of the events this year, water. And we spent some time last week considering water in music and discussion. In just a moment, part of one of those conversations with Terry Lane, Executive Director of the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust. That's just ahead on this Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Opera in the Ozarks presents its 68th summer season, June 22nd through July 20th, with 22 performances at Inspiration Point in Eureka Springs and Arts Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. Featuring nearly 50 vocalists from across the nation, productions will include De Fledermaus, The Barber of Seville, and The Ballad of Baby Doe. Tickets and information at opera.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Last week, we spent about 90 minutes at Walton Arts Center discussing water. Water happens to be the theme of this year's Artisphere Festival, presented by the Walton Arts Center. In about 15 minutes on our show, we'll hear music from Still on the Hill, guests that night discussing how water had influenced their most recent albums. They also played music for us. Right now, our discussion with Terry Lane, Executive Director of the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust, a non-governmental conservation organization founded 15 years ago in response to rapid development in the region. Our conversation took place in front of an audience at Walton Arts Center. The Land Trust provides local, voluntary, and permanent land protection to services to landowners and municipalities who wish to forever conserve the special places that define our region. Terry, welcome to Walton Arts Center, Artisphere, and Ozarks at Large.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
You grew up here.
I did.
Can you confirm, for people who perhaps did not, that it has changed?
It has changed a lot. I can confirm, yes.
And so the Land Trust, 2003, it had already changed quite a bit then.
Right.
What's kind of the initial mission? It's to preserve, but in a kind of special way.
Yeah. Yeah. So the Land Trust was founded, as you said, 15 years ago, and it was kind of during the first big wave of development and urbanization, and a group of regional community leaders saw the need for a local land trust that was dedicated to the people and places of our region and to, protecting what makes our region so special and so unique as we grow.
So I want to ask you about the three words that are used in the description of the land protection. Local makes sense. We're Northwest Arkansas. It's local. I think these other two are very important, and I want you to take each one, voluntary and permanent. Tell me about voluntary. Because that's how it works best, I'm guessing?
Yes, absolutely. So we reach out to landowners in areas that are important, and we are looking for those people and partners who are conservation-minded and who are interested in participating and voluntarily want to put a conservation easement on their property, for example, that would forever protect it. We have landowners who have, some of them, been on their land for generations, and it's very special to them. It means a lot to them, and they just want to know that that property is going to be kept whole in the future. And they come to us to find a path forward for conservation that works for them.
So let's say someone is listening to our conversation, says, oh, this kind of sounds interesting. What do they do?
Well, they call us, first of all, contact the Land Trust, and we get some initial information about the property. You know, where is it? What kinds of uses are on the land? Sometimes it will be a family farm. Sometimes it will be a wooded property that maybe has some of the river running through it. So there are different conservation values that are associated with the property. And we talk to the landowner about what those are, and then about what their wishes are, what their goals are, and you know, sometimes there are other family members involved or not, and just getting everybody together and on the same page, and then figuring out what the best, you know, path for moving forward. If they're wanting to not have ownership and management responsibility anymore, or are they wanting to make sure they keep private ownership and protect it with an easement?
I can't imagine the resources you have to have available, real estate, legal, environmental. You've got to have some partners or some sort of brain trust here.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that starts with our wonderful board of directors. Some of our founding board members are still on our board, and they come with lots of different professional backgrounds and skill sets that are very valuable. And then partners, I can't say enough about that. The regional partnerships in Northwest Arkansas for conservation are both broad and deep, and so particularly around water quality. But we definitely rely on partners to fill gaps, and it is a lot. I mean, it is a lot for just our staff to understand, as you say, all of those different components of our work. It's quite complex.
All right, the other word, permanent, that's a big commitment.
It is. It's forever.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's just a really important part of our mission, and it kind of goes back to being local, too. You know, we live here, we work here, we are the people who know this region best, we know the people of this region, and we are active partners with our conservation landowners and our other partners, and that's partly how we ensure permanence. We are also an accredited land trust, and there are about 1,700 land trusts across the country, different shapes and sizes, but only about 350 so far have achieved accreditation, and we are one of them and the first in Arkansas. And what that does is ensure that, you know, we are meeting best practices for permanence. And so everything from the way that we set up our conservation agreements, the due diligence that we do, the real estate type due diligence, the legal language that we use, the funding that we have and that we get with each property and set aside so that our promise to steward that land, you know, it's more than just signing the paperwork that says this is protected. We are in it for the long haul, and really permanently protecting land just begins with getting the documentation in place. After that, it's our stewardship program that carries that forward. So there's you know, a lot of parts of it to ensuring permanence.
Preserving land in the Beaver Water watershed, Beaver Lake watershed, I know is important, but tell us what preserving land can do to protect the watershed and the water itself.
Yeah, ever since our founding, we were closely associated with water quality preservation, and particularly Beaver Lake, our drinking water supply. And, you know, I mentioned the conservation values that we work to protect. That includes wildlife habitats, it includes family farms and local food supplies, our scenic resources, outdoor recreation, but clean water is a big part of that. And so with Beaver Lake in particular, there is a strategy in place, a watershed protection strategy that kind of spells out what needs to happen to ensure that water quality into the future. And a component of that, it lays out how many acres of forest, how many acres of grassland, how many riparian feet, you know, the stream buffers, must be permanently protected to keep and maintain that water quality into the future. So we are an important partner in that.
This area has grown, is growing. All projections show will continue to grow. What's the sense of urgency with those of you at the Land Trust?
It's great, yeah. We actually just launched our 3-year, 5,000-acre campaign. We are really trying to turn up the dial on addressing that urgency and getting more land conserved more quickly. We do feel there's a race against time. We have a strategic land conservation plan that we follow, so a lot of thought goes into identifying those places that are the most important for our region. We are focused on connectivity, on landscape scale conservation. If you go to our website, you'll see what our landscape priorities are. And that's because connectivity of conserved land is so important. We don't want to end up with conservation islands, green islands here and there. We want to have impact. And with water quality, that's very important along our rivers, for example. Just, you know, the strategic focus on those areas is really important.
Do you talk about numbers or accomplishments thus far in big numbers?
As far as acres protected?
Yeah.
And yeah, the land trust, we're a small regional land trust, but we've got about 2,000 acres protected so far. And we are, yay. We are, like I said, launching our 5,000-acre campaign, so we expect that number to jump up significantly. As far as other numbers, I'm trying to think. We have a lot of fundraising that goes into our work, and
yes.
So
those are important numbers.
Kind of the bucks and acres, yeah, those are two important metrics. But part of our new campaign is we need to raise nearly $3 million. That will help fund our staff in doing this work, but it also is to establish a land acquisition fund. We have worked with landowners who are interested in donations thus far, but we are moving into actually having some purchasing power. There are properties that are on the chopping block, so to speak, and we see them going, and we need to have a little bit more power to address that urgency, and that's where the fundraising for land acquisition is coming into play.
Do you have a favorite memory of green space or outdoors growing up in Northwest Arkansas?
Yes. Well, I grew up on Kessler Mountain.
Ah, speaking of preserves.
Right, yeah. Right. It's really quite the full circle moment for me working with the Land Trust. And the Land Trust holds the conservation easement on 384 acres on Kessler Mountain that is owned by the city. And there's a trail system on that mountain. But those are the woods that I grew up running around in and climbing every tree and turning over rocks and playing in the creeks. And, you know, there were no trails then. Nobody knew what Kessler Mountain was. Town found us, I guess you could say, for sure. And everybody knows what Kessler Mountain is now. And I was just telling somebody the other day, I would navigate through the woods by, you know, I knew the boulders and the rocks and the different trees and unique landscape features to find my way around. And now on the trails, I get disoriented. You know, they confuse me.
5,000 acres in 34 months mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. roughly, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
35 months and 5 days. But
sure, yeah.
Okay, fine. Best of luck.
Thank you.
And thank you very much. Ladies
appreciate
and gentlemen,
it.
Terry Lane.
Terry Lane is the executive director of the Northwest Arkansas Land Trust, and our conversation was recorded in front of an audience at Walton Arts Center as part of the 2018 Artisphere Festival. The theme for Artisphere this year is water, and in a moment, more from that evening when Still on the Hill performed music from their most recent CDs, both inspired by water. That's just ahead on Ozarks at Large.
Local support for 91.3 comes from Arcom Plus, providing digital and offset printing, graphic design and promotional items, and a variety of business services for jobs of all sizes. Located just off College Avenue at 461 East Township in Fayetteville, Arcom has been locally owned and operated for over 25 years. Printing NWA.com or 444-7711 for more. KUAF is celebrating its two longest-running programs, Shades of Jazz and The Pick and Post, with a live concert event featuring local musicians Garrett Jones, Steve Fisher, Austin Farnham, Emily Cates, and others, some performing together for the very first time. Ozarks at Large host Kyle Kellums will MC the evening, and listeners are invited to tune in. It's the KUAF Summer Night Swing live on the air Friday, June 22nd, 7 to 10 p.m. on 91.3 KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. Water is one of the single most important parts of our lives. Last week, we recorded a program about water in front of an audience at Walton Arts Center. The theme of this year's Artisphere Festival is water. And water is also the theme of the two most recent CDs from Still on the Hill, Once a River and Still a River. Last week, Donna and Kelly Mulholland, the duo Still on the Hill, played music from those two CDs for us in front of an audience at Walton Arts Center.
Ladies and gentlemen, Still on the Hill.
Thank you so much. Good. Well, we are thrilled to be a part of Artist Fiddler, and especially since the theme is water, and our last two CD projects were focused on water. And so we're going to start off with a song that is kind of generally, it's about the mysterious quality, that this attraction that water has, that has been for all time. You know, people are just drawn to the ocean or to a lake or to a river or to a swimming pool or to a spa. You know, we just love water. It's nothing new. In fact, there's a rich history behind that with the Native American people.
Yeah, the Cherokee, they would go to a body of water every morning to start their day, and they would bathe themselves in the water to kind of start fresh and new. So this is called When I Go to Water.
All right, and it's focused on Beaver Lake specifically, but we were asked to do a whole project about Beaver Lake, and so this is the very first song on that album. You'll see why in a moment. Here we go. Cherokee who greeted the dawn. They went to the water with a prayer and a song. The waves beckoned me to the shores of Beaver Lake to get out on my sailboat, simply drift away. It really don't matter what course I might take. The wind fills my soul when I go to water. When I go to water, I can feel my worries drown, sinking down to the bottom. On an altar made of water, I will lay my troubles there. I will rest my soul when I go to water. I'll get my old cane pole, my flat-bottomed boat, fill up my cooler of my sweetheart a note. Said I'll be back this evening, a brand new man. I'll heat up the griddle and grab the frying pan. But if I catch nothing, it won't matter, you know. And it fills my soul when I go to water. When I go to water, I can feel my worries drown, sinking down to the bottom. On an altar made of water, I will lay my troubles there. I will rest my soul when I go to water. That sets my mind free, rocking to the rhythm of an ancient melody, an inner tube and sunscreen, something cool to drink, a bright summer sun shining down on me. That's all that I need to relax, don't you know? And it fills my soul when I go to water. When I go to water, I can feel my worries drown, sinking down to the bottom. On an altar made of water, I will lay my troubles there. I will rest my soul when I go to water. I will rest my soul when I go to water. Thank you so much. You know, so when we started this project, we had to do some research. You know, we were asked by a couple of different organizations. There was the Beaver Lake Water Shed Alliance and the Beaver Water District and ABLE. Three different organizations had asked us to do this. And so had to do some research, kind of uncover the stories of Beaver Lake and its watershed. And one of the first things you bump into when you do that is an amazing event that happened in 1927. It was called the Flood of 27. And in that time, this is kind of shocking, but one-third of Arkansas was underwater.
One-third of our state.
And it was really a game changer for everybody. The Mississippi River had backed up into the White River. It had covered the entire Delta. Many people were displaced. So the federal government started at that time to
to make new laws and new declarations. That's when the dam building started in the southeast. And the initial motivation was flood control. It turned out, and in these days, we think of it more as water supply and recreation and electricity, hydroelectricity, but really flood control was the first motivator.
Mm-hmm. And so I found a diary of a young woman named Lucy Summerfield Holfield. Lucy Summerfield Holworth. And it was her diary of surviving the flood up on the roof of her house. And we turned that into the song.
Now, you and Radio Land are going to hear a very charming little instrument that you can't see, of course, but I'll tell you real quickly. It's made by a man named Jim Lee. And it sat in the Mountain View Folk Center in a glass case for about 30 years there at the big auditorium. And it's just a beautiful instrument. It has four strings. It's carved out of a single piece of crab apple. And you'll just have to use your imagination, but it speaks for itself.
Buckets of rain pouring down as we pray for the levees to hold.
Old man Mississippi had a mind of his own. The high waters came, washed away our home. No time to gather anything. Oh, photographs or grandma's rings.
Just a prayer on the way.
As we face the flood,
I'd brace myself against the wind, wet calico against my skin. Felt the darkness crashing in as I climbed up to the rooftop.
Watch the river rising high, black water spreading far and wide.
I nursed the baby and I cried, oh, where will we go now? That night felt like eternity. I pray to God, please rescue me. That town went down in history
in the flood of 27.
Volunteered both day and night at camps set up by the Red Cross.
Young black men were forced to stay, repair the levees without pay. Small talks took my child away. Damn that old river. Then Uncle Sam, he stepped in with promises to build great dams
all across these southern lands
to tame those rivers.
Subside, the sky is smiling big and wide. Clouds have all been pushed aside.
Now I'm starting over.
Thank you. True story.
Thank you. So, you know, after creating an album about Beaver Lake and the White River, which we called Once a River, it seemed so obvious we needed to do another one. And about the one river in Arkansas that has never been changed by mankind, and that is, of course, the Buffalo River. So we decided, there was a good title for that one as well, as it was still a river. And we're so thankful that there is still one free-flowing river in Arkansas So we have a whole project about that one as well.
Actually, the Buffalo is our nation's first historic river. Very, very special. And this song is called From Ponca to Pruitt. And that's two little towns along the Buffalo River that you might canoe between. And so we took Kent Smith wrote the book about the Buffalo River. And his first chapter is called From Ponca to Pruitt. So he pulled lines out of his very poetic book and wrote this song. So get your paddles and your life jackets on, because we're going to canoe down the Buffalo River.
All right, here we go. My wooden paddle, I pushed off the bank from Ponca to Pruitt. We floated that day, and lacework of branches crisscrossed overhead, dropping dogwood blossoms on the riverbed. And a twisted juniper high on a bluff, and a craggy old voice whispered to us in bluff. Flow river, flow river across this wild land unspoiled by the hand of man. Them low-hanging clouds where they finally disappear and drop this rain, glistened everywhere while the river it danced on its journey downstream, whistling at azalea all dressed in green. Like an orange red start, oh blessed be, up in a red bud, singing to me, singing Buffalo River, flow river across this wild land unspoiled by the hand of man. But its real name's unknown. A pinnacle of time, all worn and weathered, like a mighty fortress rising from the river. And high on a dark cliff, gloomy and gray, I swore that I heard an old vulture pray. Friend Buffalo River, flow river across this wild land unspoiled by the hand of man. We took one last rapid and then one more chute. Finally floated down to the last quiet pool and the bluff there at Pruitt and up around the bend brought our good journey on the river to an end. And a honeysuckle waved as we said goodbye, and a wood iris wept and a water thrush cried. And Buffalo River, flow river across this wild land unspoiled by the hand of man. Buffalo River, flow river across this wild land unspoiled by the hand of man. Thank you. Thank you.
Donna and Kelly Mulholland, still on the Hill, recorded in front of an audience last week at the Walton Arts Center as part of the 2018 Artisphere Festival. They performed one other song that night, and we'll hear that on Sunday's Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's at 9 a.m. Sunday morning on 91.3. And in just a moment on this Tuesday edition of Ozarks at Large, more from that night at Walton Arts Center as part of the Artisphere Festival. As we consider the future of water, with P.J. Marshall, co-founder of Restore the Earth Foundation, and Carl Safina with the Safina Center. He joined us by Skype that night. That's ahead on Ozarks at Large.
91.3 is supported by the Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain, located on the square in downtown Bentonville and open daily until 9 p.m. Admission is free. 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com.
Welcome back. This is Ozarks at Large at the Walton Arts Center for Artisphere 2018. We are devoting this entire edition of Ozarks at Large to water, and we have a conversation about now how we're all connected to water and how we're ultimately all connected to each other. Let me introduce our guest. Carl Safina is a writer, observer, educator, and presenter. His writing has earned a MacArthur, a Pew Fellowship, a Guggenheim Fellowship. He is the first endowed professor of nature and humanity at Stony Brook University. He directs the nonprofit Safina Center. His written work has appeared in the New York Times, Time, and many other places, including his books like Song for the Blue Ocean and A Sea of Flames. After this conversation, you can find out much more at carlsafina.org. He joins us by Skype. Carl, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And here with us in Fayetteville is PJ Marshall. She is co-founder of Restore the Earth, whose mission is to restore the Earth's essential forests and wetland ecosystems. Before Restore the Earth, she worked as a top strategic marketing consultant for major firms. She also co-founded Heart to Hand Toronto, a grassroots community organization providing food to disadvantaged families in Toronto, going 20 years strong. She's also been responsible for major fundraising campaigns. This stirs the public radio heart, by the way, for organizations like the Royal Orlando Museum and the Houston Symphony. PJ Marshall, welcome to Fayetteville, the Walton Arts Center, and Ozarks at Large.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Carl, we've been talking about water, its importance. It's ubiquitous. We all know we have to have it every day, but I do think sometimes we take it for granted. I wonder if you do agree with that, and then what is the danger with sort of taking such something so precious for granted? Carl, why don't you take that first?
Okay. Well, we take a lot of things that are precious for granted. Water is certainly one of them. In the United States, especially in much of the United States, people are really, they're just really unappreciative of the amount and the safety and cleanliness of the water we have in our homes. And the quality of the water that we have in our natural waterways. In most of the rest of the world where I travel, both of those things are not true. I was in Uganda a couple of months ago, and every morning women fill giant jugs of water and put them on their heads and walk miles home, and that water is not clear and clean. Most of it has to be boiled or filtered before anybody can drink it. And we take perfectly drinkable water and use it in our toilets, which is really rather remarkable. We spray it all over the place. We wash our cars with it. We really don't seem to think that it's any more limited than the air around us. But I can remember before the Clean Water Act, when a lot of the water in the United States, a lot of the ponds, a lot of the lakes, a lot of the rivers were extremely filthy. And I see that kind of deteriorated water quality in lots of other places in the world. We are very lucky that our water has gotten a lot cleaner over the course of my lifetime. And we're very lucky that we still have clean drinking water. But in a lot of places, the water table that we pump for this water that we don't appreciate is dropping in a lot of the country because of the way that we use it for irrigation and other things. So it's definitely the basis of life, and many of us don't really think about it very much.
PJ, do you find that we can tend to take water for granted?
Especially here. I mean, look at all the water. You know, you're surrounded by water, so when it's plentiful, you even take it more for granted. It's only when you don't have it, you're in these remote areas where you have to really work to have clean water. But it's so hard to consider how valuable it is if you have it so plentiful around you.
You know, I think most of us know that you have to be responsible with things like motor oil and things like that, because that ends up in our water tables and water supplies. But I wonder, do we really realize how much of what we do affects water consumption and water quality from what we eat, how it gets to us?
I doubt it. It's not something that's on the top of your mind every day. I mean, most people go through their day with their normal activities, and it's not something that they're really paying attention to. Why should you? You know, if it's readily, turn on the tap. That's all you have to do.
Carl?
If we were paying attention, we would never use fertilizers on our lawns, and we would never use pesticides, because you know, those things are the two main things that are really affecting water quality in a lot of places. So, and most people just don't think of that at all.
We think often about, we hear about carbon footprint, but what about a water footprint? I mean, should we be thinking about that as well?
Yeah, what should we not be thinking about? I mean, I like thinking about things. I like thinking about the miraculousness of water. You know, it's a lot nicer to use it if you think it's a miracle coming out of your tap than if you think it's just stuff. And I don't know really what else to say about that. I think, you know, it is a miraculous thing, and there are a lot of people in a lot of the rest of the world that do not have anything like the kind of water that we you know, flush down our toilets to ever take a sip of. They don't have that, and we do, and it's kind of painful to see that we don't at least honor that incredible gift and take better care of our waterways. Sometimes young people say to me, I don't understand why we need a Clean Water Act. The water is fine. Well, you know, when I was a teenager, there were rivers catching fire, and the water was exceptionally horrible in a lot of places, including the Hudson River, where I frequently was near the shore. You did not touch that water. Now it's a delightful place, and that's because people who were thoughtful about it fought very hard to make some very big changes. So it's unfortunate that after all of that work, what happens is that the people who get that gift don't get the instruction manual that allows them to really appreciate what they have, which is, you know, appreciation is a nice thing. It's not a scold. It's not, you know, it's not a lecture. It's not a negative. It's just like we are surrounded by miracles, and one of them is water.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting things. How important is how we message and what we say to better protect and better respect and appreciate water?
Well, I think we need to connect the dots. I mean, I think that's a big number one priority, and connect the dots in a positive way. I don't think we need to scold people or tell them what, you know, highlight what they're doing wrong, but make them aware of what they can do to protect what is already there and enhance it and amplify the quality of it from this, you know, from their awareness level in the future. And I find most people are pretty receptive to that. They just haven't thought about it. It's if you bring it up and you begin to have the discussion, we could be talking about it more in a positive way, and how we can really start taking action, or thoughts and actions, to make a difference. I think one of the challenging things that we see, which would seem like a simple thing for people, are plastic water bottles that we find in the most remote places, not just in the rivers and the Gulf, and I mean, you already know about the big issues in the oceans, but think about plastic water bottles, and even water bottles that are thrown away with the lids on them, there's water inside those water bottles that gets tossed in the trash. Well, most people are not even thinking about that. I mean, that's just one little issue, but it's kind of one of my picadillos when we find them in the most remote places. But, you know, we also don't want to sound like scolding teachers all the time, talking about what you should and shouldn't do. It's just creating that awareness where people haven't just been able to see what happens to these products once they're discarded.
Carl,
one thing I think is very odd is that if an environmentalist said to you, we want to protect the water, we're going to charge you 1,000 times more than you pay now. You know, that would be a very, very unpopular thought. But bottled water costs 1,000 times what tap water costs. And everybody thinks it's okay. And then those plastic bottles become a problem by the millions, and that grows every moment.
And interestingly, they're not connecting the fact that many people say that they're drinking bottled water because they think the tap water is not good. Well, let's go back to the source of what the tap water maybe needs to be addressed versus coming up with an alternative. I mean, it is just a skewed thinking, and it's not, again, good or bad. It's just lack of awareness.
Carl, one thing I love about Song for the Blue Ocean is how you personally connect people around the globe to the ocean and to the water. Is that one way we can, you know, these personal connections sort of fight the disconnect many have with water and behavior and water quality?
Yes, but I mean, you know, it's one thing to be disconnected from sharks or giant tuna. It's another thing to feel disconnected from water. If you're disconnected from water, which most of us are, you really have a fundamental problem with the way that you live. Most people don't know where the water comes from when they turn on their taps. I don't even know exactly where the well is that serves my neighborhood. I think I know where it is. I'm not sure. The other two places I've lived, I have no idea exactly where the well is. We don't hear really any news about what happens with the aquifer. We have, where I live, we have very good aquifer protection that allows aquifer recharge from rain, and it's pretty well managed. But I would guarantee you that virtually nobody of the millions of people that live where I live on Long Island knows anything about how the aquifer is protected or what steps were taken over the last 30 years to protect those areas so they wouldn't get built on and they would be able to still function as a source of water. We live on an island surrounded by the ocean on Long Island. If we don't protect our aquifer, we won't have any water. So it's pretty important for us. A lot of people have no idea where the water goes when they flush the toilet either. So, you know, to be disconnected with the thing you most crucially need after air, you need water. And if there wasn't any water, there would be no life. And to have no idea where that comes from or goes to or anything like that is a really sad state of affairs for virtually all of us. So, yes, I mean, it would be nice if people took a little more interest in something that they rely on so crucially.
So what do we do? Those of us in the room, I think we're like-minded. We want. So what are some things that we can do?
I was gonna come up with a point of turn off the water and see everybody react. Once they don't have any water, that's when you get their attention, is really when it happens.
Well, I mean, things that I personally do is I try to honor the water. I mean, that may sound a little bit funny, but it feels very nice to pay attention to what you're doing, how much you're using, trying not to waste it, trying to reuse it in little bits. It doesn't make a big difference to reuse it. Like, you know, at the end of the day, if we're going to empty the dog's water bowl, we use that to water the plants instead of throwing it down the drain. So we just take a moment to sort of, you know, thank the miracle that we have and honor it by not wasting it. I have a pretty dusty car most of the time. I never water my lawn. I do water the vegetable garden, but I water it carefully and personally. I don't just turn on the sprinkler. I stand there with the hose. And, you know, a few things really a few things like that. And then try to pay attention to the bigger things, the really bigger things, like if there's an issue coming up with the Clean Water Act reauthorizations every few years, write some letters, get involved a little bit with that. I don't know if I mentioned, I never use any pesticides at all. I never use any fertilizers at all. And I still have, you know, my lawn is as good as anybody else's in my neighborhood. My bushes grow as fast as anybody else's. I still have to cut the bushes and do all the things everybody does. It's not like I live in a brownfield at all. I live in a beautifully green, lush neighborhood with a beautiful backyard. I just don't hurt the local waterways if I can help it.
One last question for both of you. It's going to be the same question, Carl. I'm going to ask you first. You mentioned reference, I think, the Cuyahoga catching fire when you were a teenager. You've seen change. You've been all around the world, and you've seen how human activity is changing the natural world. Are you optimistic in 2018?
I'm pragmatic. You know, if you're on the team, you don't get in the huddle and say, "Hey guys, are we optimistic?" You just try to win.
Well said.
I'm trying to win.
PJ?
I am. I mean, it is a little bit of what we're talking about here. The more we engage, the more we find engagement. And that network spreads and spreads, and it's all about each and every one of us. And, you know, that's how things happen, and we can do it. Yes, I am very optimistic.
Carl Spina, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you joining us by Skype.
Okay, you're very, very welcome. Thanks for having me.
PJ Marshall, thank you very much for coming down here. Thank you.
And there was more from our conversation with PJ Marshall from Restore the Earth and Carl Safina from the Safina Center. We'll hear some of those comments Sunday morning on Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning at 9. Our conversation is about water and the music we heard earlier from Still on the Hill, recorded in front of an audience last week at Walton Arts Center in downtown Fayetteville as part of the venue's 2018 Artisphere Festival. The festival continues with events this week, and you can learn more at waltonartscenter.org. A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and LaRue. Ozarks is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. We're ending this edition of Ozarks with music from Isaiah's All-Stars, recorded for us inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Isaiah Warford and his special all-star guest, David Bright, will be at Kingfish in Fayetteville Thursday night. And Isaiah has a different all-star guest every third Thursday through October with him at Kingfish. More about that and other shows at his Facebook page. Thanks for listening to Ozarks at Large. Back tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m.